Can the Titans generate enough pass rush with their defensive end group? Who starts opposite Jermaine Johnson and who makes the roster? We're breaking down the edge position on this Titans training camp positional preview on the Music City Audible. Let's get to it! Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com, publisher for NFL Draft on SI, and my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, we're rolling on with the training camp positional preview series here. Today we're talking defensive end. What does this group look like? We've already done the safeties, the corners, and the linebackers this week. Last week we did the entire offense. Go check out the series if you haven't seen it. Tomorrow we'll finish it up with the defensive tackle group, maybe the most exciting group of players on the Titans roster. But today, defensive end. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thanks for asking. Interesting group here the Titans have at defensive end. More question marks than answers, in truth, right? I think every player is more of a question than a solution, right? At least right now. What do they get from Jermaine Johnson, you know, who they traded for? They traded a good young player in Tavondre Sweat, you know, one who they probably didn't really love his personality, didn't love the scheme fit. But still, they had two more years on that rookie deal, cheap, and they traded him for a contract year, Jermaine Johnson. What do they get from Femi Oladejo, you know, as a sophomore after a, you know, rookie year derailed by injury and underperforming? What about Keldrick Falk, you know, first-year expectations for that rookie DN? So lots of questions in that across this group. Excited to get into it with you today.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because there's been speculation all offseason if the Titans would add another defensive end to this group or a veteran defensive end to this group, considering the question marks across the board, including with their top guy at the position, Jermaine Johnson, who, like you said, is going into a contract year, is going into year two off of a torn Achilles, which historically has been a player's like most frequent return to form season. So you hope that he can return to form, but there's no guarantee. With all these question marks, you thought maybe they'd add somebody at the position, a veteran, a Joey Bosa, who doesn't seem very interested in playing football anymore, or a Von Miller, who's been in the, you know, getting some buzz last week for potentially getting ready to sign somewhere. But I don't think the Titans are going to add anybody to this group. I don't think they need to add anybody to this group. I think it was Iron Grids, who is now Roster Grids, who is a longtime Audible Army member and daily listener of the channel, who threw out the idea that you kind of need to take this year, with as crowded as this group is, to get some answers on the players you have. And then if the group proves to be not good enough because those answers come back negatively, who really cares? You're not trying to win a Super Bowl this year. You're trying to build a foundation and better understand your own roster. So guys like Jermaine Johnson, is he going to be worthy of a second contract? Is Femi Oladejo going to pay off his draft capital as a second round pick? Can Keldrick Falk adjust to the league quickly enough and come in? Like, you need these guys to be playing snaps to learn that. And if you go sign a veteran, you will never get that answer because the veteran will be taking the playing time over those either younger or unproven or just guys with question marks in general.
Yeah, I kind of get that line of thinking because the way I look at it, there are three players they need to get answers on, and two of them are going to be pretty definitive. And what I mean by that is, like, Jermaine Johnson's in a contract year. They're going to have to make a decision, right? Do they want to keep him around? Was he just a waste of a trade? He's not coming back from the Achilles, whatever, whatever. You're going to get that answer this year. I'm pretty confident you're going to get an answer on Femi Oladejo too. You know, if this goes really poorly in year two, I'm not saying you're, you know, moving on next offseason. I don't know if I'm ready to say that, but I think you go into year three pretty clear-headed on where you're at with Femi Oladejo. And then Keldrick Falk, nothing's going to be definitive after a rookie year, but it's going to be important to get that big sample size on him, right, going into year two. So I get that line of thinking. And if you're bad at the position and you're picking in the top 10, which, let's be honest, is a real semi-realistic outcome for them this year. If they're a six-win team, you know, you're picking in the top 10 most likely. Then, you know, there's a kid at Texas. There's a kid at South Carolina. There are a couple other fringe first-rounders, the Alabama kid, the Oregon kid, that might, you know, elevate themselves into that, you know, top 15 conversation with a good year. And there are others, obviously, as well, shaping up to be a pretty good edge group once again. So you're going to get your answers, and then maybe – Maybe it's a big ticket draft pick next year if you don't like the answers going into 2027 when you expect to compete.
Right. But talking about 2026 now, Justin, shifting this conversation, that's just where we think the group stands and why we don't think they're going to add anybody here. But who actually is going to start at these two defensive end spots on, you know, a regular basis here? We know Robert Saleh and Aaron Whitecotton are going to rotate the players along this entire defensive line, not just the defensive tackles that we'll talk about tomorrow, but the defensive ends that we're talking about today. There's going to be a lot of bodies on and off the field frequently. But I still think having that conversation about who's going to start does matter a little bit. We are pretty confident. I mean, I would say 99.9%, I guess anything can happen, but almost certain that Jermaine Johnson will start at one of the two end spots. And then the other one, I think, is probably realistically a three-player competition, but more realistically, probably only a two-player competition between Jacob Martin, who signed as a free agent this year, and Keldrick Falk, who they spent a first-round draft pick on. I would say Femi Oladejo is in that mix as well, but the fact that he hasn't practiced yet this year for this coaching staff on this team is a little bit concerning. We don't know exactly how he's going to show up to training camp. The hope, obviously, and maybe the expectation, is that he shows up ready to practice and take the field and compete for this spot. But going into training camp, before we know that, I think it's between Martin and Falk, and it really depends on a couple of things. Number one, Falk is a run-defending edge setter, which could give him a leg up to starting because it's an early down if you're talking right about who's on the field first. But can he pick up the system quickly enough and understand how to play at the NFL level and be effective at it quickly enough to start by week one? Or do they just go with Jacob Martin because he is a veteran? He's done it before. He may not be the best edge setter, maybe more of a speed rusher type than a big end. But either way, he might be the guy that starts on early downs just because this coaching staff might feel like they can trust him more.
Yeah, interesting question you pose. I also expect Johnson to probably play the most snaps of any edge rusher on the team. Yeah. Now, that can change, especially if he doesn't, you know, like he was bad last year for the Jets. So I'm kind of envisioning him being better this year, another year removed from the Achilles. But he's a guy who's got the most pedigree in this room, you know, former first round pick, 7 sacks, career high in 2023, I believe it was, or 7.5, something along those lines, has played for Whitecotton and Saleh before. So I think he comes in with the most pedigree and is probably going to play the most. For the number two spot, I thought I was going bold, but I didn't realize how much you liked him as well. I think it's going to be Jacob Martin. Just the vibe that I get. Like, I think where everyone else has questions, we've talked about, you know, Falk, Oladejo, Johnson. I don't know that Martin has any questions. Like, number one, people forget he's played in this defense before as well. He did play for Robert Saleh in the past. He's coming off a really nice year with the Commanders, where everyone I talk to that covers that team praised him. Oh, I loved watching Jacob Martin last year. He was an unsung hero, deserves way more buzz and appreciation than he got. Career high amount of sacks for him last year, I think was in the 40s in terms of how many pressures he generated. He's just really consistent, and he's got a good motor, and he knows this system, and he's a veteran, like you said. Maybe I'll go one step bolder. I think Jacob Martin ends up leading this group in sacks, and I don't think it's going to be a ton of them, in all honesty, but I think he has somewhere between 6 to 7.5 sacks as a Titan this year, and I think with all the rotating and all the question marks elsewhere, you know, that could be enough to lead this group in sacks.
Yeah, Jacob Martin last year was credited with 8 sacks on Pro Football Focus, which he didn't officially statistically record 8 sacks, but PFF counts half sacks as full sacks. So PFF kinder to him, the technical stat was 5.5 last year. Yeah. He did have 45 pressures according to PFF and a decent pass rush productivity score, which is PFF's like combined pressures, hits, sacks metric, whatever. 37th out of 62 qualified defensive ends. That's with a 50% minimum pass rush snaps filter thrown on there. So that's middle of the pack. It's not amazing. But again, if you know, we talked about the cornerbacks the other day and how much better the room was, the room will be this year than it was last year. And I think you can kind of say the same thing about this group. Now, that's because the group was so bad last year, and you know, you got some good snaps from Jihad Ward, and you got some late, you know, pop from Jalen Harrell, who we'll talk about after the break. But for the most part, it wasn't a very good group. It's still not a great group. There's no tier A edge in this group. There's maybe not even a tier B edge in this group. Yeah. If there is one, it's Jermaine Johnson getting back to form and potentially having his best seat. Like, he'd have to have his best season to be a tier B edge in this group. And tier B, if anyone's wondering, that's like where I put Harold Landry compared to like a Myles Garrett, Max Crosby in the tier A group. So, yeah, I do think Jacob Martin wins it. The other option is that neither of these guys start officially, and John Franklin Myers plays in the end spot on early downs, and then you put Simmons and, I don't know, Solomon Thomas or somebody at the defensive tackle spots. That's an option. I think they will use that from time to time just to keep guys fresh, but for the most part, I do think they're going to have two legit ends on the field, and I do think Keldrick Falk has a chance to go out there and be like an early down edge setter, and Jacob Martin is like a third down DPR speed rusher guy who gets after the quarterback. So it's kind of a moot conversation who starts, but I think like the top three guys in the rotation are pretty clearly Johnson, Falk, and Martin, and then you get to guys who need to prove themselves like Femi Oladejo and Jalen Harrell.
I think we're going to take our first break, and after it, if you don't mind, because it'd be a bit longer, I want to talk first-year expectations for Keldrick Falk, talk a little Femi Oladejo, and then the rest of the room right after the break.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, everybody. All right, Edge preview rolls on here. Titans training camp, what is it, like 2 weeks away? Not quite 2 weeks away. If I look at the calendar here, they report not next week, but the following Tuesday is the day veterans report. So we're inching closer and closer to training camp. Talking about the edges today, Justin, you wanted to talk about first-year expectations for Keldrick Falk, a player who maybe was a bit better of a run defender than pass rusher in college, did flash some ability to get after the quarterback, but wasn't really put in an ideal role to do so in college. What do you think he can give this Titans defense in year one?
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation because he's obviously big, he's long, he's drawn comparisons to Arik Armstead, who Robert Saleh coached and developed into a really good player in San Francisco. Big reason why they traded up to 31, you know, to get Falk, because they feel like Saleh, kind of jokingly, has already coached this player before and has done a good job developing him. Now, he only had like 2 sacks this past year at Auburn. He's like, what, 270 odd pounds. He's long. That's what makes him such a good run stopper. But when you go back to his 2024 tape at Auburn, he had a lot more sacks than he did in 2025. And when you watch the film, they had put him in better positions to rush the passer. And in 2025, they totally asked him to play a selfless role, right? Like take on double teams, eat up blocks, be a space eater, things of that nature. Free up your teammates to rush the passer. So I do think there's some untapped potential here as a pass rusher for him. And I'm really excited to see how Robert Saleh utilizes him and coaches him in the beginning. It leads to a bit of an unknown. You know, I think it's easy for us to say, and I agree, like, well, he's an early down run stopper because that's what he did at Auburn last year. He's got the body type to do that. But I do think there's a mystery factor to him as a pass rusher. And I'm curious to see if the Titans unlock that this year, if they even try to unlock it this year, or if they ask him to do what Auburn did and say, well, you're just going to kind of, you know, play the run on early downs and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that when Falk talked about, you know, adjusting to this new attacking front style of defense where you're not asked to I guess you're not asked to be a selfless teammate, but you're not asked to like sit there and absorb blocks so that other people can go after the quarterback or the ball carrier. You're getting upfield on every single snap. You're trying to get in the backfield and wreck havoc. You're attacking. He talked about how he wishes he could have played in this kind of defense in college, how it took him about a week or two to get used to the get off the ball, the way that Aaron Whitecotton coaches him to get off the ball.
Wasn't doing that at Auburn.
No, but that he has adjusted to it. And so maybe we do see some more impact than we're giving him credit for. I'm being too harsh and just like writing off a bunch of rookies. We got a comment last week, Justin, on the running back preview that was like, you guys are writing off Nick Singleton. And I'm like, you guys are writing on Nick Singleton. And as we talked about yesterday, Anthony Hill Jr. And I'll talk about it today, Keldrick Falk, like Carnell Tate is the only rookie that I really expect to have a massive contributing role in 2026. I think the other guys can play contributing roles, but not massive ones. And so even though Keldrick Falk's a first round pick, like, yeah, he's going to pop here. He might have a game where he has two sacks or something, but like, he's not going to put up 12 sacks this season. I just don't want to fool ourselves into thinking that that's going to happen.
I'm going to talk about a sophomore that we also don't expect to play a big role, it sounds like, and that's Femi Oladejo. Transition us to that conversation quickly, because I mean, we've talked a lot about him in recent weeks.
Yeah.
If, you know, we both have said, well, we expect this three-man rotation to be, you know, Jermaine Johnson, Jacob Martin, Keldrick Falk, first three. I'm going to be blunt with you. If Femi Oladejo is the fourth option behind those three guys, it probably did not go well in his sophomore year. Now, I know you can disagree. I know there's room to rotate. They're going to use a bunch of guys. But if he is not out-snapping one of Jermaine Johnson, Jacob Martin, or even Keldrick Falk, I feel confident saying it probably did not go well, and we're going into year three saying, yeah, it was probably a bust of a pick.
I will disagree, because I think that, number one, this is not an easy transition that he's making from off-ball linebacker to on-ball end.
That means transition, it's not going to go well.
No, but that transition was cut short in like week seven last year against the Raiders.
Yeah, something
week
like
six.
That.
One of the two. I think it was week six. Yeah, because Callahan was fired after six games, and that was the Raiders game. So anyway, season ended after six games where he was, I mean, look, the Raiders had the worst offensive line in football and the worst, sorry Titans fans, the worst offensive line coaching in football, with Pete Carroll's Nepo baby son coaching the offensive line and doing a terrible job. So yes, grain of salt that his best, the game where he looked like he maybe was starting to put it together, was against that team. However, that resets his, like, he is now focusing on rehabilitation of a broken leg instead of working on becoming a defensive end and improving his pass rush game and edge setting and not being an off-ball linebacker anymore. On top of that, like, Jacob Martin, Jermaine Johnson have been productive NFL players who have an established role, and Keldrick Falk's a first-round pick. So if he's not out-snapping those guys, I don't necessarily think that means a season is a failure. I think it means it's taking him a little bit longer to make this transition, because he's coming off a serious injury and making a difficult transition. And my last point is, there are two end spots to be rotating. So really, you'd expect the top four guys to all play quite a lot. If he's not outsnapping Jalen Harrell, then we have a serious problem. But if he's not outsnapping those other guys in year two, given the nature of his position change and injury, I'm thinking, okay, he got a full season to get his feet really wet at this position. Let's see how year three goes before I'm starting to write him off as a bust. Now, again, if he's not outsnapping Jalen Harrell, it's a different conversation. And Jalen Harrell flashed a bit at the end of last year, but I think you can give Femi a little bit more time than that, because there are two spots that you're rotating probably two guys each at, and maybe they're swapping sides, but like, it's not three guys rotating through one position. You know what I mean?
I get it. I just, all I'm saying is, I don't think there are a ton of examples in the NFL, and there are some where if you don't know after year two, the answer is probably not going to end up being good.
But how many of those examples were making a position change and suffered a season-ending injury six games into their rookie career? Like, there are circumstances here that can make this potential exception.
But I think if after year two you include all those circumstances, I don't know that there are a ton of year three guys who are like, well, they had a broken leg and they switched positions, but then they became Pro Bowler. Oh my God, in year three, they just became unbelievable football players, right? Like, I don't know.
It could... it could happen. I mean, I'm not saying it will or won't, but it could be a development curve. Year three is a breakout year for NFL players at a lot of different spots.
JSN I'm assessing last year two, Femi Oladejo, before we get to year three. That's the focus of today's preview. Jalen Harrell, the fifth and final guy we expect to make the 53-man roster. I honestly don't think he's guaranteed a spot. I think with all the rotation, it should help, and I think he's got a leg up on everyone else who we're going to mention in 2.2 seconds because we don't think any of them have a chance to make the team. But, you know, Jalen Harrell, I think 5 games last year to conclude the year, at least half a sack in all five, really turned it on and showed something. I don't want to say it's a shame that he doesn't get continuity because we're so glad that the last coaching staff is gone. But it certainly, you know, kind of showed something towards the end of the year. It probably would have helped his developmental curve if he did have some continuity. But he's going to have to learn and thrive in this Robert Saleh defense instead. I think he could be the fifth guy. And like you said, if one of those guys in front of him, especially Femi or someone, aren't performing well and Harrell is on this team, then he could easily become the fourth rusher and get those rotational snaps.
Yeah, there are 9 total guys in the room competing for what we project to be 5 spots. Now, we never know exactly how this roster math is going to shake out, especially with a new coaching staff. We haven't gotten to know really yet through this process. But the other 4 guys we haven't mentioned yet are Malik Herring, who was signed from Kansas City, which could give him a potential edge in a competition battle here because Mike Borgonzi worked with him there. Ernest Brown IV, Truman Jones, these are back of the roster training camp body type guys, although Truman Jones has stuck around a bit, but I don't see these guys making the roster with the upgrades they made. And then the last guy is an international pathway program player, David Ebuka Egoha. He counts as a roster exemption, allows them to carry 91 instead of 90 in training camp, but won't allow them to carry 54 instead of 53.
But they do get the extra spot on the practice squad, though, I think. That's how it works. So he'll end up on the practice squad, but he won't count towards the number designation. They'll have one extra on the practice squad is the way that works. I'm with you. I mean, none of those guys really have a chance to make the roster. I think it comes down to, is it 4 or is it 5? I think it's 5 based on the way Saleh rotates. I think Jalen Harrell has a significant advantage to be that fifth and final guy. And I guess if there's someone's going to compete for it, it's probably Malik Herring based on his connection to Borgonzi, obviously giving him a chance here. I think he's had some injuries. He kind of flashed early on in his career. That's what I was able to put together. And then had some injuries. And it felt like Borgonzi's like, hey, you were flashing when I was in Kansas City. We'll give you a shot here to get your career back on track. That's going to do it for today's Edge preview. Let us know in the comments below, who do you expect to start? Who are the first 2 defensive ends on the field for the first snap against the New York Jets in week 1? How do you feel about the Femi Oladejo debate Graver and I had?
Is he a bust?
And what are your first-year expectations for Keldrick Falk? Lots of questions in this group, so you guys should drop your comments below. We'll jump in there and answer them. Until tomorrow, when we're back previewing Jeffrey Simmons and the defensive line, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.